Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. Also joining me is tonight's co-host, and in the second half hour, my special guest, Brent Turner. The city and county of San Francisco has been a leader in not just litigating on behalf of the city, but on behalf of individuals against whether it's the federal regime in power or corporate America. In the first segment tonight, David Chu, city attorney for the city and county of San Francisco, will discuss such pending litigation as challenging new restrictions on homelessness funding or suing manufacturers of ultra-processed foods. For the remainder of the broadcast, you'll hear from the front lines of Red America. Brent Turner, the Assistant Registrar of Voters of Shasta County, will tell us why he and Registrar of Voters Clint Curtis were recruited to address unrest in this Red Island within California. Of course, our most important guests tonight are all of you listeners. Please join us in our conversation by calling at 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-4134. 8255. That's 866-798-8255. You don't have to jump in exactly where we are in our conversation. We're here to pass on information. We're here to pass on some legal principles to educate, to inform. And without further ado, anyone in the Bay Area, perhaps anyone well-informed in the country who's been following the news, should be aware of myriad litigation spearheaded by the city and county of San Francisco. The first Asian American to hold the post, David Chu, leads an office that's been regarded as a national model for public law offices, bringing landmark cases to protect and expand the rights of San Franciscans while providing high-quality legal counsel to about 100 city departments, boards, and commissions. City Attorney Chu came to San Francisco in 1996 and thereafter has served in the office of the District Attorney, the Board of Supervisors, the Assembly, and has taken a city attorney's office already at the forefront of activism to a whole new level. Without further ado, David Chu, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks for having me on, Jeff. It's good to be back on with your station.
It's very hard to know exactly where to start because your office is entertaining such interesting cases of late. I was just looking through the number that you've either filed or joined within the last week. You've already filed 13 lawsuits against the federal administration. But I think I'd be remiss if I didn't start with a suit that was filed earlier this week. You filed a first-of-its-kind lawsuit against ultra-processed food manufacturers. What can you tell us about that?
Well, so we decided to bring this case because there are a number of companies that have designed food to be addictive. They market it to maximize profit. And like the tobacco industry, they knew their products made people very sick, but they hid the truth. Made billions upon billions and have left taxpayers and patients and cities and states and public health system to clean up this mess. My office, I'm really proud that over the years we have successfully held accountable industries that have profited enormously from products that they knew harmed the health of millions, from big tobacco to lead paint to the opioids industry. This is that next fight.
You've also taken on a lot of interesting litigation in terms of consumer protection, worker protection, housing and building code. Is there anything in particular you would like to chat about first up?
You know, I'm happy to talk about any of it. I am blessed to be part of an office that has this history of fighting for civil rights and consumers and workers and the environment, for public health, and of course, at this moment, for the state of our democracy and the rule of law and the Constitution vis-a-vis the Trump administration. So you tell me, what do you want to talk about tonight, Jeff?
Let's start by talking about you. How does somebody start out coming out here, joining a new city, and landing at as many interesting posts as you have? How do you get from the legislation of a city to the state legislature and sending 75 bills onto the governor before going on and taking a local crack at the city attorney's office?
Well, I grew up on the East Coast, first kid in my family, born in the United States to my Chinese immigrant parents, and was inspired by the civil rights movement and the studying of that in college, and decided to go to law school and have a master's degree in public policy. And I happened in my early 20s to visit San Francisco and California for the first time, and just fell in love with my city and our state. We live in a really special part of the world and our country when it comes to our innovation, how we are on the forefront of the fight for so many rights, our diversity, our food, our weather, although at this moment it's quite cold. That's what pulled me out here. And for a number of years, I worked as a criminal prosecutor and as a civil rights attorney. And then I was inspired to scratch my itch of the fact that I'm a policy wonk and a political junkie, and ran for the Board of Supervisors, where I served for 6 years, and then the state legislature, and had really a wonderful time working with so many diverse perspectives and stakeholders to address our housing crisis and inequality, and think about rebuilding infrastructure in our state, dealing with the climate crisis. But had this opportunity to come back home in San Francisco during a bit of a corruption crisis at City Hall. And that was now in my fifth year as city attorney. And I can tell you, every single year has been different. If you had asked me a year ago, would I have been doing all the things that I'm doing this year? I had, obviously we had some sense when Trump was reelected about how bad things would be, but boy, it has been quite a year.
The most recent lawsuit that you've joined in that I'm aware of with the Trump administration is challenging some restrictions that are placed on homelessness funding. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, well, let me just take a step back and say, you know, we knew Trump 2.0 was going to be horrific, but I don't think we fully appreciated the magnitude of the constitutional blitzkrieg that he has taken up. My predecessor, who was an incredible city attorney, Dennis Herrera, filed 10 lawsuits against the first Trump administration over 4 years, which was the cutting edge at the time. We have been part of 13 lawsuits in the first 10 or so months of this year. If you do the math, it's about six times the pace of Trump 1.0. Not because we want to sue, but because we have to, because every single day, this administration is coming after our communities, our values, and in particular, our federal funding. Of the 13 lawsuits that we're talking about, 9 of them have been specific to defending monies that we have received for many, many years, monies that cities and counties around the country have received for many, many years. But the Trump administration has placed illegal and unconstitutional conditions on this money. And that includes the most recent lawsuit that my office has brought with Santa Clara County and a number of local jurisdictions around the country. What the Trump administration suggested is if we want to receive homelessness dollars to help keep people in permanent supportive housing, we have to agree to illegal, unconstitutional conditions. And we have seen this playbook before. We've challenged similar conditions in other policy arenas. So this is why we had to file for San Francisco. We're talking about over $50 million that we received to keep folks housed during one of the worst housing and homelessness crises in our nation's history. And the idea that he's changing the rules of the game to kick folks out onto the streets during these winter months, it is just cruel, it is inhumane, and we could not stand by without going to court.
You know, there's a layer that most people miss when you talk about federal spending and him taking away our dollars. President Trump has targeted blue states, and in particular states that provide much, if not most, of the federal funding. California is one of a few states that are net payor states. And when you look at almost all of the red states, particularly Texas, Florida, just about all of his support base come from states that live off federal dollars and receive far more than they pay in.
Absolutely. We are a donor state. We send billions of dollars to Washington to be dispersed to many of these red states you're talking about. And all we're saying is the small share that we have been receiving from the federal government, we should continue to receive it. Trump has threatened, just for my city and county of San Francisco alone, billions of our dollars of federal funding that we have received over the years in a whole variety of contexts, from health and human services to transportation and infrastructure and education dollars, even public safety dollars. He loves to talk about how Democratic cities are unsafe, and yet he has illegally conditioned money that would give us the ability to hire more police officers. We had to bring a lawsuit because there's been a longstanding program that protects, that allows us to prepare for potential disasters or terrorism attacks. The Bay Area is one of the top targets, as decided by the federal government, for these sorts of emergencies. And he thought it was smart to just not pay us money for the work that we are already doing. And that just, again, gives you a sense of, unfortunately, the nature of this federal administration.
Hello, David. This is Brent Turner. How are you doing?
Hey, brother. How are you?
Good, man. Just wanted to thank you for all your great work and say, just for the record, I think it's known by you that I did mention it was going to be bad. It was something to avoid, and you know, we didn't avoid Trump like we could have maybe with some better process, but I appreciate your work and wanted to say hello to you and again thank you, and wanted to hear particularly regarding your food legislation.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about ultra-processed foods for a moment. So what that is, it's really food that's not food. We're talking about products that are not found in nature. They're created by combining any number of thousands of new artificial chemicals that are supposed to help enhance flavor, smell, or color, and combining those chemicals with industrialized processes. These chemicals are metabolized differently from the body. In fact, the body learns to crave them, and they're designed so that addictiveness is a feature, not a bug. Think you can't just eat one Lay's potato chip. This ultra-processed food industry has flooded our food supply. 70% of the American food supply is ultra-processed foods. And the challenge with it is that they present unique health risks because of how these chemicals are made, how they're combined, and the harm is that they've created a massive public health crisis with skyrocketing healthcare costs. Quite simply, ultra-processed foods are making us sick. And we've all suspected when you eat junk food, you know it's not great for you. But the studies that have come out in recent years, the massive data sets confirm the link between ultra-processed foods and chronic diseases. As we've seen ultra-processed foods increase, so did chronic diseases. Type 2 diabetes, fatty liver disease, heart disease, kidney disease, even depression. And this has been particularly alarming with kids, this epidemic of preventable diseases. We're seeing obesity levels, type 2 diabetes levels that we have not seen before. And there has been this growing international consensus by the scientific community, studies that are coming out month after month, despite this industry's attempt to try to deceive and deny the public and literally pay off scientists.
You know, as a lawyer, one of the things we all talk about is standing, and that is a court being able to tell us individually, mind your business, what gives you the right to be stepping forward for these people? It's not you involved. My question for you, how do you respond to a standing challenge if asked, how can San Francisco step up and take on such a challenge as processed foods on behalf of maybe their citizenry or other similar cities?
So my city spends over $3 billion a year on healthcare, and our local and state governments around the country have borne enormous healthcare costs from these chronic diseases. And just as we successfully held accountable big tobacco, this is literally the second generation of the history of big tobacco. And let me just share this history. So in the 1960s, a number of major big tobacco companies bought major food companies. We're talking R.J. Reynolds purchased Nabisco and Del Monte. Philip Morris purchased General Foods and Kraft. In the next decade, 1970s, this food industry consolidated. And during that time period, Big Tobacco transferred its people, its ideas, its technology of addiction science into their newly acquired companies, this new ultra-processed food industry. They used the Big Tobacco playbook to research and design and market addictive products. And at the same time, they bombarded consumers with product messages, specifically targeting kids with cartoon mascots, Tony the Tiger, Fred Flintstone, Paw Patrol. They had marketing campaigns with child-focused media companies like Disney, Nickelodeon, Mattel, Marvel. They targeted low-income communities of color. And they did this knowing that their products cause significant harm. In our lawsuit, if you read the first couple pages, we describe a scene from 1999 when you had CEOs of the largest U.S. food companies who met. And there were Pillsbury and Kraft executives who warned their industry leaders that ultra-processed foods had gone too far. They predicted these devastating health consequences that would cost our country over $100 billion a year. They said there would be a public health toll that rivals tobacco, and they were ignored. And all of that has come true. So this is why, you know, we've all known that these foods aren't great for us, but to see the science and the connection with these diseases that are literally not just making us sick, but in many instances killing us, I felt compelled, my colleagues felt compelled to hold this industry accountable, to address the deceptive marketing practices, to make sure that hopefully we'll get some restitution to offset the enormous healthcare costs that we've had to pay.
Thank you, David.
Let's talk about some other interesting cases you're working on. One of them is I know the city is involved in environmental work within the city, and it looks like you've had some success of late.
So not too long ago, we actually had a case where there was a company that polluted the bay, and we were able to settle for $5 million because of their impact on our waters. We currently are in litigation with some of the largest fossil fuel companies in the world because of their role in impacting sea level rise, which is then forcing us to spend billions of dollars in sea level adaptation. And so climate change is, despite what the Trump administration would say, is absolutely real. And we're doing our part to litigate these issues, both in the Trump administration context, but also with some of the worst actors when it comes to pollution and climate change.
Some of the other actors you already spoke of, and that's the tobacco manufacturers, but it looks like you've had some success against tobacco retailers as well.
So in recent years, as Big Tobacco has evolved its products, they've moved to vaping devices, as well as selling flavored tobacco that is literally meant to hook an entire generation of new kids onto their tobacco products. And we had seen for many, many years, year by year, a steady decrease in tobacco usage. But in recent years, these products have really been taking hold. And so San Francisco was one of the first cities in the country to ban the sale of these flavored tobacco products to minors. But it turned out that a bunch of these online tobacco retailers are still trying to sell to San Francisco illegally. And so I brought a couple of lawsuits against several of these online tobacco retailers of flavored tobacco products. We recently announced millions of dollars of settlement with those companies for their violations.
Is it limited to online, or is it happening at stores on street corners throughout the city?
You know, unfortunately, it's not limited to online. Stores should also not be doing it. We have had some cases involving storefronts, but I think a lot of storefronts in San Francisco have now got the message.
It seems that it's widespread in all cities, probably all cities throughout the world, that people try to circumvent the regulatory schemes within the city. It looks like you've had a significant victory against a developer who was trying to work around the complicated scheme to avoid regulatory oversight. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I think you're referring to a recent case that we recently wrapped up that involved a public integrity corruption scandal within our city's Department of Building Inspection. A few years ago, it was found that the president of this building inspection, a gentleman by the name of Rodrigo Santos, had been fraudulently billing clients for permits and other work that he pretended to do but actually didn't, which meant that these clients were being bilked, but also he was skirting the rules within our city when it comes to building and being permitted to build. And so we took him and his colleagues within his company and some of his business partners to court. He ended up has spent some time in our penal system, but also agreed collectively to pay over $5 million back to San Francisco for the deception and corruption of his acts.
David, I have a couple questions for you. This is Brent Turner again, and again, thanks for being on the show. One is, could you tell us what your thoughts are on your own career, where you think you might end up, where you're going, what your next political steps are? And the second question I have for you is, I know you did some great work supporting our advocacy for open source voting systems in San Francisco. And then, of course, Senator Kamala Harris worked with Ron Wyden and put some legislation together at my direction regarding waiver of certification fees for open source systems. Can you tell me, and this is the fun part, what happened at the end of the election process with Kamala? We were instructing her to take a look at the results and dig a little deeper before conceding. I told Willie Brown two things. I said, tell her not to concede and that there something might be amiss with the current state of the voting systems, even though obviously Trump commandeered that issue. Can you tell us why she didn't look further into the elections and where are you going?
Well, I couldn't. I couldn't tell you on those issues what happened at the end of the electoral cycle. Except, you know, as you've said, I've been very intrigued by the possibility of open source voting. You know, certainly a number of years ago, there have been lots of concerns raised about certain proprietary software, and so the idea that we could get a little bit more comfort with open source voting is something that I have been open to, and hope that we can figure that out. I do hope that we never discover that the elections were fraudulently obtained when it came to Donald Trump's second win, but you know, let's knock on wood on that front. You know, as far as myself, I'm always a believer that you can't look too far ahead in politics. I believe, you know, if I do the best job I possibly can at serving the public, we'll see what the future brings. I never expected to be elected supervisor. When I was supervisor, I hadn't thought too far ahead about running for the state legislature. And then when I was in the legislature, it was kind of an overnight thing that all of a sudden I became city attorney. And I have loved each role. Each role is very different. In this role, I get to fight for the people in a whole variety of ways. As a former civil rights attorney, as someone who cares about protecting workers and consumers and our environment, and as someone who thinks we have to meet this moment with an authoritarian regime of protecting the values and people and funding of our region and our state, I feel like I'm exactly where I need to be right now, and we'll see what happens in the future.
You've been involved in myriad causes that do not stop at the city limits. One of them is the use or misuse of the National Guard. Can you talk a little bit about some of the litigation that the city's been involved with?
Well, we, you know, as I think folks know, Donald Trump has illegally sent or attempted to instruct the National Guard to go into peaceful cities and exercise his military authority in completely unconstitutional ways. And so these issues have been litigated in a number of jurisdictions around the country. We were part of an amicus brief on some of these. And if Trump had sent his troops into San Francisco, we were prepared to go to court. We literally had papers ready to go. And fortunately, that did not happen, but who knows what happens in the future. You know, what Donald Trump is trying to do is what authoritarian regimes have tried with playbooks in many, many countries over many, many years. We need to stand up for that. And we need to go to court when we should. One of the saving graces of this moment is putting aside the U.S. Supreme Court. The judiciary has remained relatively independent. We have seen judges from across the spectrum who have been appointed by Democrats and Republicans, as well as including by Donald Trump, who have ruled against this president because what he is doing is so illegal and so unconstitutional.
You mentioned the U.S. Supreme Court. I know one of the issues you were involved with before is actually in front of the Supreme Court now, and that's the issue of birthright citizenship. Can you tell us a little bit about the city's position and whether you're involved in the Supreme Court action?
Absolutely. You know, this is something I have been thinking about for a long time because one of the bedrock constitutional cases in this area, we all studied it in law school. Jeff, you probably remember the Wong Kim Ark case. And just a little background, the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution says if you're born in the United States, you are considered a citizen. We all accept that. That's the constitutional law. That's what the Constitution says. A few years after that was enacted in a constitutional amendment, there was a Chinese American who was born in San Francisco's Chinatown during a time of very intense anti-Asian hate. His immigrant parents decided to go back to China. He went back home to visit them one year. And when he came back, he was held on a steamboat for 5 months. And Chinese immigrant families pooled their resources to purchase the best lawyering that they could in the 1890s, took the case up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and in a very famous constitutional case, the Wong Kim Ark case, the Supreme Court, at that time a conservative court, read the Constitution as we read it and saying, the guy was born here in the United States, he is a citizen. And so Donald Trump now, over a century plus later, is trying to just rewrite the Constitution. It is absurd. And this is why, as he said he was going to do it, I told my team, we need to start preparing for this. We were the first city to sue Trump a day after Election Day, because on Election Day, on his inauguration day, because on his inauguration day, he signed an executive order saying birthright citizenship exists no longer, banned. And so we went to court alongside Democratic attorney generals around the country. Every case in the lower courts that have looked at this have found in our favor. But now that case is going to go up to the U.S. Supreme Court this coming spring. So fingers crossed.
Great work, David.
Your office is doing some amazing work. We're running close to the end of the first half hour. I wanted to give you the opportunity, if there's any final thoughts you want to share with us, anything you see coming down the road, anybody you want to give a great shout out to in your office?
Well, I just want to say I am so proud to head up what I think of as one of the very top public law offices in the entire on the clock, not just on matters related to the federal administration, but we have this year a new mayoral administration, new legislators on the Board of Supervisors, and also all of these challenges from homelessness and public safety to getting our downtown economy going, working really hard. And so I just want to give a public shout out to the incredible legal professionals of the San Francisco City Attorney's Office. Maybe the last thing I'll say is we, for a lot of our cases, we rely on information brought to us by the public. So if you know about an employer who has been withholding illegally wages or health care from their workers, please reach out to us. You can come to our website and there's a place for you to give us some information. If you believe there's consumer fraud going on, please let us know. If you think there is corruption going on in city government, please let us know. We litigate a lot of cases where tenants are living in a building owned by a slumlord when code should be enforced. We have shut down drug and gambling dens in the Tenderloin. So I encourage the public, if there are things that they think are wrong, please reach out to the San Francisco City Attorney's Office. We look into all leads and we require that partnership. And that's how our civic democracy should work, a back and forth between the people and government agencies and myself as an elected official. So I really just encourage folks to engage with us.
David Chu, thank you so much for joining Your Legal Rights. I would love to have you back anytime and would also love any input. If you or your office have stories you would like us to cover, we're very interested in hearing further. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
And this is 91.7 FM, KALW San Francisco, and online at KALW.org, along with the KALW app. And you're listening to Your Legal Rights. My name is Damian D. Minor, here with the man who wears many hats, that is John Carroll.
Good evening, good evening. We're in the first day of our December membership campaign, and we're asking for your support. As we look, you know, as I look back towards 2025 and forward ahead to 2026, one of the things that I think about is here at KLW, we uphold this principle that everyone should have access to deeply researched and meticulously reported information. That service is a public good. It's pretty much, it's like a civic utility for the Bay Area. And so we don't provide the news at a profit. We are funded by the public. And that public, dear listener, is you. When you make that gift of support, you're supporting programs like Your Legal Rights. When you make that gift of support, you're supporting programs like Your Calls or Zagular. When you do that, it helps to fund everything that we have here at KLW. So please take this opportunity right now and make that gift of support by calling 1-800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org and click donate. And please be as generous as you can.
The information that we just heard, John, is something that you're not going to get that anywhere else.
No, and there's no other stations that's running a show like you've just heard.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And even just having guests like what we just had on, I mean, and you know, with David on, and you know, he is you know, part of the government, the local government of San Francisco. So information like this is definitely key, and we got to have information like that that's exclusive. It is exclusive to KLW, and we appreciate that. And so with a program like Your Legal Rights, that is really the only thing, I've never heard this show anywhere else in this market five of radio broadcasting. So I appreciate this show very much, and I hope you do the same as well, because this kind of counsel you don't hear all the time. And so on Wednesday nights at 6 o'clock, I look forward to this program, especially because I know I'm going to learn something. And if you feel the way I do, 800-525-9917 or at klw.org. And just to have this kind of information is very key, and it can really save your life one day.
Yeah, and we are able to provide this only because we are an independent public media station. We are funded by our community to ensure that this kind of information, that these services are freely available to everybody, regardless of whether you can pay or not. The information is here. We want you to know about it. Past supporters have stepped up and made it possible so that people can continue to receive this information. And your year-end gift today, right now, will help secure this accessibility for everyone today, tomorrow, and for the years beyond. So please, we're asking you right now to commit to this. Make your gift. Call us at 1-800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org and click donate.
And this is the show that Chuck Fingley built. He built this, and Jeff Hayden is doing an amazing job in continuing to uplift the word, especially when it comes to law. 800-525-9917 or at klw.org. We're going to now go back to Jeff Hayden for Your Legal Rights.
And forgive me if I sound like I'm speaking in the same room that the two of you have been speaking in just now, but not all of our guests have been as friendly and articulate as what we just heard from our city attorney, David Chu.
Yeah,
we've had some great guests in the past, in the recent past, as Christine Pelosi, and some horrific guests as in the bit more distant past with John Eastman, who was telegraphing what he would be doing a week or 2 weeks later, challenging the election. and you won't hear those anywhere else.
We had David Chu here.
Yeah.
Thanks to you, Jeff.
Thanks to you.
That's amazing just to have that, because I don't know everything that's going on in our local government.
So you can't. Nobody can.
Exactly. No one can know that.
Although I have to say, City Attorney Chu seemed to know everything. I was unable to stump him on any of the litigation going through the hundreds of attorneys in his office.
That's pretty amazing.
And that's amazing.
You know, I think that's, as you said, there's a lot of information. There's a wealth of it. And no one citizen can actually know anything that's going on. So it's helpful to have these kinds of conversations and really to be able to provide this information to folks. So thanks, Jeff.
Thank you so much.
And another of our great guests, not to be outshone, is our old friend Brent Turner. Brent is an Oxford grad. He's a civil rights activist, and he's currently doing a great public service as the assistant registrar of voters in Shasta County, which is deep red California, which is a little hard for us to fathom. This place is not that far away, and yet it's a world away from the mindset of most folks in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a longtime friend of the show. He's a longer-term friend of mine. He's a local from Redwood City. Brent, you've been with us for the first half, but as our special guest for the second half, let me welcome you back to your legal rights.
Thanks, Jeff. I'll put on my different hat and be your guest now.
I could use a hat right about
now. Okay, great. Me too.
You've been telling an ongoing story, but I'd like to take the view from 30,000 feet and tell me just what the heck happened. You and Clint Curtis, who was with us a few weeks ago when we were talking about Proposition 50, the two of you were recruited by Shasta County to go in and cure some election issues. What kinds of things were going on there?
Well, I always mention the movie Bad Day at Black Rock with Spencer Tracy, and it's quite similar of a story. There was a concern amongst the public in Shasta County that the elections weren't being conducted properly and that there was a lack of appropriate security there. So through the Board of Supervisors, Clint Curtis was brought in, and then he contacted me and I joined him there. This was 6 months or so ago, and we thought we would have clear sailing for a year until the following election. But with the special election and Proposition 50 coming forward, we were thrust into a situation where we had to deal with an election, and we really had no institutional knowledge on hand, and it was a difficult situation with staff that was not necessarily pleased with our efforts to come in and re-situate everything. So that's what happened. I coined it the miracle on Market Street because we had a successful election. There was no violence, and there was not much to speak about. It was a clean election that got certified actually yesterday by the county, and now will be certified by the state on Friday.
What were some of the issues that were going on? You mentioned vandalism and violence. What kinds of stuff was going on there before you got there?
Well, the warring factions, the left and the right and the fringe on both sides, were getting frisky with each other and pepper spray and going over to each other's houses and all sorts of press regarding the interactions there. And so I had an interesting occurrence of going and meeting with some of the most upset folks in the town and basically had conversation with them, encouraged them to be more participants in the process rather than just throwing marbles at the process. And in the end, it all worked out. The two sides reconciled some differences and really came to bat for democracy by helping us conduct the election. So I called it a social experiment, and it happened to turn out very well. There was some luck with our skill, I'm sure, but we managed to implement upgraded procedures as well as calming the situation. So we felt real good about that.
What kinds of things did you have to do to calm the situation?
Well, we implemented security upgrades and brought in cameras. So we provided transparency for the public so that they could watch everything, all steps of the process. Of course, the one thing that is still missing from our process in Shasta County is we're still using intellectual property software in the tabulation systems and throughout the electronic voting system. So that will be the final step to really put California elections on a par with what's happening right now in Mississippi and in New Hampshire, where they're using open source software to conduct their elections. And that allows for a completely transparent situation. But currently in Shasta County, we did manage to put together some cameras that gave the public a comfort level, and we accommodated the public differently than they were being treated before when they were basically kept out of the process. We invited them into the process.
And what were the you mentioned earlier that the staff was somewhat resistant to change. What were the things they were hanging on to that they did not want to let go?
Well, when we first arrived, my registrar of voters, Clint Curtis, that you mentioned earlier, he had just fired the assistant registrar. And she is or was the sort of the hometown hero there. And that created an atmosphere of animosity. And I walked into it. But we managed to retain some folks that were helpful and dedicated to democracy in a fashion that allowed us to really focus on the task at hand rather than get into the personality conflicts. There was a natural resistance to our plan because it makes the workers have to work harder. And rather than playing into a clerk convenience, we wanted to make sure the public was accommodated and their needs came first. And that's what we accomplished there by bringing in these cameras that allowed viewing of all the process. And basically, there was literally a wall that had been put in place with spikes and iron. And we tore down that wall and brought the public in. And it was a bit of a social experiment. And it did work well. So we feel like that was probably the most transparent election in certainly recent California history. And we're trying to now speak with the Secretary of State, bring in the open source software for the tabulation and the election management systems, and see if we can create really the top level of security in the United States.
Seems to me there's really three goals that you should be having in your role as assistant registrar and Clint's role as registrar. You want to accommodate the public.
True.
You want to instill confidence in the results of the vote. And first and foremost, you want to make sure that everybody gets it right.
Yes. Well, the last part is probably the most difficult because there, anytime you have humans involved, you have to have heavy oversight and redundancy to optimize the security. And I think we did that to the best of our ability in this election that just came up. Now we have another one coming up, which Clint is actually going to be a participant because he's running against the woman he fired, the former assistant registrar, who's now running for registrar. So that'll be an interesting situation that will create all sorts of friction, I'm sure. But we're going to stick by our program we've put in place, keep inviting the public in, even the people that have been the most upset. And we're looking forward to really setting the tone for California elections.
Talk to us a little bit about the local pulse up there. I know when you came in, there were wanted posters, there were targets with pictures in them of some of the folks, yourself or Clint Curtis. Has that calmed down?
Well, yeah, there was a posters put around town of Clint, and they showed a gun on it, and I think he's had his car scratched up, and, you know, little vandalism stuff like that. But the DOJ, the Attorney General, everybody's aware of it, and we're not thinking it's moving in that direction. We're thinking that it's moving in a calmer direction. But that being said, we're always aware, and the fact is, the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, they showed up on election night, and we managed to get through it, and there were no complaints coming from them. So we're very appreciative of what we've accomplished thus far and looking forward to the next election. But we do want to have this conversation with the Secretary of State, where we voice our concerns that California should be leading for transparency and security regarding elections, and to see New Hampshire and Mississippi ahead of us regarding security upgrades, that's a bit disconcerting.
So I understand your position and your desire to go to open source voting. And correct. What that would mean is basically let other folks oversee how the votes are counted, how they're being tabulated, and really not keep everything behind a curtain.
Correct.
But rather be out. What other steps can we take that would help make the whole voting system, the whole vote counting system, transparent?
Well, the steps that we implemented in Shasta County are the band-aids that are necessarily in place, irregardless of the open source software being in the tabulation phase. So that is available for anyone's perusal, and that worked well. The final step is the open source software. We did disconnect the 1% audit piece. There was a previous program where the computer itself would actually pick the precinct to be audited, and we disconnected that machine from our process and did it the old-fashioned way, like a lotto system with some ping pong balls. We could have used dice like they use in San Mateo County, but instead we opted for the ping pong balls and chose our random precinct to be audited in that fashion, rather than letting the proprietary software decide which precinct was to be audited. So we did also
let's back
do,
up
do
just,
little
back
pieces.
Up just a little bit.
Sure.
You mentioned a precinct would be audited.
Yes.
The piece that you disconnected was actually the machine deciding which of the precincts should be audited?
That's correct. That's how it's normally done, and we rejected that concept.
And you mentioned San Mateo County does it with dice.
Correct. Last time I checked.
Tell us about that process. How would they pick the precinct using dice?
Well, they used an 8-sided dice. I don't know if they're still doing it that way. But I came in and rolled the dice, which was interesting because it felt a little like a gamble. But I rolled the dice.
For someone with your background going to Shasta County, isn't that a little bit of a dice roll in and of itself?
That's very dicey. Thanks for that. We appreciate in Shasta County the food of the Bay Area. That's what I miss the most. I say there's no North Beach in Shasta. But yes, in San Mateo County, we roll the dice. I still believe that's the way it happens. I think it's an 8-sided dice, and that creates a randomness in the audit selection of the precinct. I think that's preferable to the machine deciding the audit, because that can raise an appearance of impropriety.
So tell us what you did with ping pong balls to replace the dice.
Well, we shook them in a box and then had somebody blindly pick them. I had an embarrassing moment where actually the ping pong balls flew out of the box for a moment because I'm not the most careful shaker in the world. But we overcame that and got our audit perfected. It reconciled perfectly. And even more importantly than that, we've now been certified by the county and are looking forward to celebrating Friday's certification by the state.
What does it mean for the county to certify it? I mean, isn't that you as the registrars doing it?
It is, but we pass it through to the Board of Supervisors. They stamp it, and that goes on the books.
And what does the state actually do to certify it?
They take a look similarly to how the county operates, and they put their stamp on it, and it goes in the books. So that's the end of the road for that particular election. Once it's certified, it's very difficult to contest, and it's fairly well stipulated that you had a good election.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights. You still have a couple minutes if you want to call in. Our number is 414-15-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll free at 866-798-8255. We're talking about voting. We're talking about the way your votes are counted. We're talking about steps towards complete transparency, whether it's the camera, whether it's the random selection of where to double check, what places to audit. This is not partisan stuff, folks. This is how we make sure, number one, we accommodate the voters. Number two, that everyone ends up with faith in the outcome, even if it's an outcome you didn't like. But the first and foremost challenge is to make sure we get it right. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You've got a couple minutes left. Phone number again is 866-798-8255. So what's your next challenge in Shasta County?
Well, I think the next duty at hand is we've had some assistance from Senator Josh Becker putting together a push for the waiver of certification fees for open source systems. That would be beneficial in the context of California, as there are now vendors that have placed their systems into, I keep mentioning, New Hampshire and Mississippi as the thought leaders in this on this issue of election system security. And of course, it's interesting and begs the question, when you talk about Mississippi being ahead of California regarding election system software technology, that is because they don't have the politics there. We here in California suffer from the affectation that both parties receive donations from Microsoft, from the tech bros that don't want open source to come into the light of day because or gain any spotlight from the issue of voting because they're selling software and they're currently in control of the environment. But we want to break that cartel down and make sure that the people are in charge of the voting process and nobody from a corporation is putting their thumb on the scale.
And even short of actual corruption, if we keep things the way they are and the people who have been elected continue to get elected, why would they want to change it?
They would not. And that is the problem at hand, too. If an elected wins on a system, they think that system works pretty good. When they lose, they might have their mind opened a bit. But certainly that issue is at hand. Recognize in San Francisco, we had the ability to move forward with a public-private partnership to provide these open source election systems to San Francisco. That didn't complete, but we can still move in this direction. But in the meantime, Shasta County seems to be positioned to do so because it's so filled with friction there. They need solution, and they already threw Dominion out, which raised the question for them. Where do they go next? They picked up a Hart InterCivic system, but it's still running the proprietary code.
Do you want to take a couple minutes and tell us what's on the agenda, what's coming up in Shasta County, and to your knowledge, what's coming on throughout the state in terms of trying to make some more transparency in voting?
Well, the state, I'm looking currently to meet with the Secretary of State, Dr. Shirley Weber, and her team. We do have the good circumstance of a vendor called Voting Works that is interested in California and willing to serve purpose here. San Mateo County may turn out someday to be a leader here because if we get some progressive people, progressively minded people in office that can be helpful in the world of San Mateo County elections, that'd be great. And we're hoping that people like Senator Becker continue to push for the waiver of those certification fees so we can accomplish that and get situated as quickly as possible to lead the rest of the country.
Do you have any new elections coming up in Shasta in the next year or so?
Yeah, we're going to have one coming up in June, I believe, July of next year. And like I said, Registrar Curtis will be running for that spot. I think we're going to have some movement around the state regarding registrars. It's a tough gig, and it's a thankless job, so there seems to be a good amount of transition, and we're just hoping that as the youth comes into some of these prime positions, we understand that we don't want corporate controlled software deciding our fate. We want to get the corporations away from the election process and make sure that we're using public software.
That sounds like a great goal. You do have an election coming up pretty quickly. I hope it goes smoothly. I hope it goes transparently. And I hope the locals can appreciate the outcome, irrespective of whether it's the outcome that some of the individuals or some of the power structures up there wanted. I hope they appreciate the efforts you've done for transparency and that in the end, everything was done correctly, irrespective of the outcome.
I think that's where we're headed, Jeff. We, like I said, we're proud of what's gone on in Shasta County. It's a place that should be noted that I think it went from worst to first, and we're going to continue to fight for transparency there, and hopefully that will affect the rest of the state and the rest of the country.
And take us right to Mississippi. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, in our first segment, we discussed an overview of what's been happening with the city attorney in San Francisco, some of the very interesting litigation they've been involved in, with none other than city attorney David Chu. In our second half hour, we transitioned to an overview of what's happened with voting, what's happening with vote tabulation in Shasta County. That's a view from inside Red California. And most specifically, what happens after your vote's been cast and how the entire world can see it. No mystery up there. Our guests tonight have been the city attorney for the city and county of San Francisco, David Chu, and in the second half, Assistant Registrar of Voters of Shasta County, Brent Turner. Tonight's show was produced by yours truly. Please be sure to join us next week on Your Legal Rights, where, as always, we will take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, David Chu, and to tonight's guest and co-host, Brent Turner. Thank you all for joining us. And on behalf of Your Legal Rights, a big thanks to all of you for listening. And at the controls, Damian D. Minor. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and zealously guard your legal rights.